Raising Consciousness Show on Wolf Spirit Radio. Simon actively encourages you to post your questions live to him in the chat room at wolfspiritradio.com/listen. When you ask a question in the chat room, please make sure that you've logged into the chat and go. That's the set name at the bottom. That you have a nickname, and that you ask one question in all caps. That makes it easiest for us to collect. Thank you. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests, and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Hey, P, how are you?
I'm very well, Simon. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Wolf Spirit Radio. This is now 7 o'clock p.m., well, 5 past, on the 3rd of the 1st. We've managed to make it till 2016. It felt very quick that year. It just went... Bye. Thank God for that, because it was horrible. You know, everybody was under attack, and we're all pretty tired. But, you know, I've had a bit of a refreshing wave, and hopefully you've had a little bit of a rest, Simon.
Yes, it's been a very good start. And I just obviously want to say, of course, I missed the round table that you had in December, which wasn't because I forgot. I had no modem. I was without internet for about 5 days.
Ah.
It happened at the critical period. And of course I couldn't get any sort of message to you. I could get someone to get a message to you, JP, but I think you probably got lost in your Facebook points. So, that was a great shame. I wanted to be on that. I wanted to take part in that debate. And I'm sure it wasn't deliberate. I think it was just one of those things that the modem finally gave up the ghost. But it was a heck of a job to get it repaired, well, get a new one sent. So that's why I wasn't there.
Ah, right. So, I knew you'd have you know, it wouldn't be like you were just blowing us out, because you don't do that sort of thing. But you know, we had a very interesting conversation. We'll have another one soon. Also, somebody also suggested that we have you on with Alex Collier, so we may be able to arrange that sometime further down the road.
That would be something that I would be... incredibly interested in taking part in.
Excellent, excellent. So we'll work some more. So Simon, now in the last show we were going on about having I didn't have anything Christmas. A couple of my friends who live about 7 miles away down the road, they heard the show and they brought me this the other day.
Bulldog.
Which is a very grumpy looking bulldog with a Father Christmas Santa hat, and it's a pair of socks. So there we go. That's my Christmas cheer for the year.
Is that meant to be you?
That's I don't know if it's meant to be me as the grumpy bulldog, but there you go. Hi. Anyway, I won't waste the bandwidth with that. I do actually seem to have quite a good line with you tonight, so let's not spoil the thing by putting on video and rubbish like that. Wow, we've had so many questions, of course, as usual, from every possible orifice and vector, you know, and everybody's going, oh, where's Simon? We haven't seen him. So we're very pleased to have you back. You know, I'm unbelievably thrilled. Everybody's, you know, let's have a quick look in the chat room. I've got several screens and several mouses going on. No, we are live, and hello, everybody. So people have been here since like 2 o'clock this afternoon, putting questions into the chat room, 2 o'clock UK time.
Let's hope we can get some questions from the chat room, Jake.
Yeah, well let's get them all in. All right, so we also seem to have crashed the website.
up to your old tricks.
Oh, yeah, everything's happened. So we probably we've got 77 people in the chat room. That's quite a record. So lovely, everybody. It's wonderful to have everybody here. And I'm just going to get, first of all, I've had a whole list of CC, Connecting Consciousness Group. I got them to, rather than kind of overload the chat room because there's loads of them, I got them to do a separate, collection that Beth and Kurt Tyrell are doing. So that's, thank you to those two.
JP, would it be possible to do one question, say, from the...
Exactly what I was going to say.
And then one group from the chat room.
Precisely. Plus other vectors, you know, I didn't get a paper letter this time. I got a paper letter last month, but I got some other things that came through various other contact forms from other websites. So let's start with, from a CC member who's called Diamond Light. I'd like to know about the role of the other planets in our solar system, how they interact with the Earth and her sun as she makes this dimensional shift. What a good question.
Yes, it is. When we think about planets that evolve and change, then that's exactly what's happening to that planet. If the planet has sentient life on it, and it's been part of an ongoing process, you can call it not a test as such, but you know, the problems of life that we face, and then we overcome them, and if we overcome them we move up a notch, and if we don't overcome them we either stay still or perhaps we slip back a bit. So all planets actually go through, or have the potential to go through, this evolution, this change. When we go through, and I'm going to be positive and saying it's going to happen, we will take all of the immediate group with us. Because otherwise what's going to happen is that you will wake up one morning and you will find a completely different star field. It isn't just the one planet that will go. It will go within the family, within the group. Now, I don't know where the cutoff is. You know, would Neptune go with us, or would Pluto go with us? But I know that the immediate group that is associated with the human race, that has a combined history with that planet, that will also go, providing that planet is being is of good intent. How can a planet not be good intent? What can happen is a planet can be artificial, like our moon, for instance. So we would have to ask whether that moon would actually travel through because it's part of the creational force, or if it's an artificially built structure, whether therefore it wouldn't go with us. So there are certain questions that that can be asked. I haven't got the answers to that one, but I know that if and when the Earth moves forward, it will not go on its own. But I couldn't tell you, if you stuck a pin in the Earth and drew a circle, I couldn't say at what point you know, those planets wouldn't go with the Earth. So there will be a connection of familiar astral bodies that will come with us, but I don't know the process of that. So that's a really good question.
So it is. Let's go now to the chat room, which thank you very much to Vanessa for collecting these questions. There's so many coming in, it's ridiculous. Anyway, here from Shake Up. Hi guys, Happy New Year. Thank you, Simon, for all your hard work over the past 5 years. Here is my question. The AI intelligence known as the Archons is being described erroneously, to the annoyance of one Gnostic scholar. He states that the term is not cited or used in the context from where it was derived. His studies have brought him to this conclusion, that the Archons are the accidental anomaly resulting from a cosmological event known as the Sophianic Fall from the galactic core. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm happy to use the term AI because it embodies an understanding that unawake people can grasp. We shouldn't be surprised that in our 3D world, the computer world, the technological world coined the phrase AI for artificial intelligence, although we hardly hear it now, but some 10 years ago it was a very common word used, specifically with computer games for PC, CD or DVD games. The AI was the piece that made that game work. but it's deliberately not being used at ground level. But I use it, and others use it, because it most accurately reflects something that wasn't created by source. And what the questioner is the questioner is not wrong. Things can be made or caused to be made, but not to contain the divine source. So if something happens, generally source will say, okay, it's free will, I'll let that run and let's see where it goes. And if it's going to cause great harm and hardship, I'll just terminate it. But I will let it run because of this free will. So AI came about because of a fall, and I don't mean a fall off a cliff, but a fall in grace. So that element is correct. But it has grown and become the biggest enemy, not just of the human race on this planet, but of every sentient living creature. Even the reptilians are under the sway of the AI. So the reptilians have free will, just as we do. And the reptilians do what they do, but they are manipulated. Now, they publicly don't accept that, but privately they do. And just as they have been manipulated, many other groups are. Now, what's interesting is that groups like the Palladians, the Lyrans, are not manipulated because they have built a firewall between their technology and the invasive technology that the AI has created. So 1947 with the Roswell incident, that was brought about at the behest of artificial intelligence using a particular grey species to dump technology on Earth to force the technological bandwagon on planet Earth into the direction they want. So the whole object of AI is to destroy humanity. Not by nuclear bombs, but by converting humanity into robotic type creatures. So AI cannot manifest itself on the planet Earth unless the human race wishes it. And the only way that the human race would wish it is if it took on 51% artificial body parts or electronic parts, and therefore the human part became in the minority. That's the only time that this rather evil, horrible stuff could actually manifest itself here. But in the meantime, it is manipulating and cajoling. I've talked before in previous conferences about the Industrial Revolution, particularly obviously in the Western world, and how I believe that was orchestrated by AI that wished to push along the industrialization. So AI is not source created, therefore it is artificial, therefore it is not divine, but it came about because of a clash or a schism at a very, very high level. So the questioner is not wrong, but it's very important, I think, that I continue to use the word AI to define something that is not the creational force of the divine creator. So it's a very good question. Thank you for that.
So, but he said something that I've never heard before. Sophianic fall.
Yes.
What's that?
This is the fall. Well, we can talk about the Sophia. We can talk about the divine power and the divine constructional force, the driving force. But there is one overall creator, but there are other sub-creators as well. So we have this one divine force, which on this planet is erroneously called God. The alien beings that I communicate with probably got it slightly better when they call this creature the undying creator. So they don't make it male or female. They say it's neither. It's the undying creator. So what you can have is each planet has an energy field around it, or it has a signature, just as each human being has a fingerprint, and that fingerprint is unique to that individual. So each planet has a unique signature, like its own fingerprint. Well, sometimes issues can occur and stimuli are required and sometimes get out of hand. So AI came into this sector, into this quadrant, into this area, and planet Earth is a firewall. So many, many friendly or benevolent off-planet species are involved on the planet Earth, because if AI isn't stopped here through the reptilians, because the reptilians are actually carrying it, I don't mean physically carrying it, but energetically and technologically pushing it, if it's not stopped here on planet Earth, then it will spread right across. So Earth is seen as a firewall, and that's one of the reasons that so many benevolent off-planet entities got off their armchairs and actually decided to get involved. So it came about because of a schism between creational forces, and it was seen as a counterbalance, and it was a counterbalance that got out of hand. But there's very, very little on this. If you troll the internet, you'll find hardly any information on it at all.
Exactly, exactly. So I try to find out, you know, because these are some of the outer edges of our knowledge domain that we keep needing to. So a number of listeners has managed to crash the listen chat site. It should probably reboot itself and come back online in a couple, in some time. It does that automatically. But so anyway, until then, we got loads of questions. Number three. Let's go to list number three. Okay. This is from Christiana. Why is there increased interest in Mars with Elon Musk, SpaceX, NASA, and media exposure on this? NASA claims the moon will be potential launch pad to Mars. What's the truth there? Portal to Mars on moon, perhaps?
Right.
Alternative three. I'm going to say alternative three, and you can tell everybody the rest.
Right. Obviously, whatever comes out of NASA's mouth publicly is just to be put in the dustbin, the trash can, and just forgotten. What these elite organizations do is they wish to either show or tell at a level of technology which suits them. So when we talk about the moon, we talk about the moon rover, that device that looks like one of those cars you get on a stock car rally, you know, with four wheels and spokes. And
yeah, go-kart.
Go-kart. Well, that's the level of technology that they actually want to show the public. So they portray that as this is the cutting edge of technology. So when they talk about Mars and we want to go to Mars via the moon, so we're going to use the moon as a base, what they're trying to do is to say to people, we're not yet there with the technology, but in a few years' time, we'll have the technology to build a little landing pad and a launch pad on the moon so we can use it as a staging post to go to Mars. The fact, the reality is that since the mid-1950s, the American space fleet has regularly been going to the moon and Mars. So this is just part of the great deception. Otherwise, if they were truthful, they'd have to tell everyone that 20 years ago they got a cure for cancer. And of course they don't want that. They don't want to share that with us, the ordinary people. So all these are statements attempting to reinforce the understanding of the level of technology that we have. But let's go to the question, why Mars? Simply because the corporations feel it's high time to screw more money out of the taxpayer, and the only way to get more money out of the taxpayer is for a president of the United States to do what Kennedy did, although Kennedy did it unwittingly, and so I'm not at all putting anything bad on Kennedy. But basically, if you talk up a possible travel to Mars, then you are talking up extra tax dollars, and of course they wouldn't use that because they're already going to Mars and have done for many, many years, but they would use that money for something else. So it's all a ploy to get, say, multinations, get the French and get the Russians and everyone to chip in some money and and they can do it like that. What is it on the Moon and the Mars? Well, the Moon contains a number of subterranean alien bases, which are incredibly old, and so does Mars. When we talk about Adam and Eve leaving Eden, the Garden of Eden, it's no surprise that the Moon and Mars both have bases which have been termed Adam and Eve, and that's their official name outside of the public domain. So there are military bases and civilian corporation bases on the Mars, and we know we've had other people who've talked about their mission to Mars, and I did take part in a round table with Alfred Lamont Weber, and we did talk about the Mars. So that's what that's all about. It's just trying to get more tax dollars in so that they can use that money elsewhere.
The usual scam. Okay, back to CC. This is from Charine Chagnon. Did Jesus die on the cross, or was there a stand-in? Is there more than one Jesus currently on Earth by splitting the soul? Oh. And then, okay, there's a secondary question, which is a different period of time. So please go with this.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, JP. No, we didn't die on the cross. No, we didn't. When we call a stand-in, somebody else did die on the cross. Also, Jesus came to Britain, which is quite exciting. Not hugely well known. There's some people out there who have done a heck of a lot of reading on the subject, and when you are quite critical and you can define what's truth and what isn't, and you can put it all together, actually it's surprisingly obvious just what was going on. Jesus was one of the leading guys leading the Jewish revolt, against the Roman Empire. So my answer is no, he didn't die on the cross. Yes, somebody else did. So what was the next question? There was a second part, wasn't there?
Well, it's a different time period. He says, JP, under hypnosis, Simon revealed that in one of his lives he was a pharaoh. Is he willing to reveal which pharaoh he was?
Okay.
Feel free to say no.
Thank you very much indeed. We did actually talk about how many Jesuses on the earth. You can have fragments. You can have what's called the Christos energy, the Christ energy. It doesn't mean that X is Jesus and Y is Jesus. What it means is that they may contain a soul fragment, or they may contain a residual energy frequency from that individual. There could be as many as 15 people who have memories or connections to Jesus, just as, you know, there may be 15 people, 20 people, 100 people who could connect to the Dalai Lama or something like that. So what you tend to find is that when somebody through sacrifice, and remember we tend to misunderstand the word sacrifice, but through some huge explosion of energy, then the energy field of the earth is bathed in that individual's expression, and some children being born at that critical moment, or some people who are already connected, can actually take on some of that frequency. And also there is the possibility of soul fragments being reconnected at a later date. So yes, then that was the point. And I've completely forgotten what the last part of the question was.
Pharaoh.
Right. No, I really would like the person to show me or play me the part where I said that I was a pharaoh. I don't, to any knowledge, remember that.
Okay.
I don't have any past life memory of a pharaoh. If the person is saying to me that I had a past life of a person who in this history, in this world of history, is understood to be A or B, but probably was a pharaoh before that, then that's a different story. But I've never actually said that I was a pharaoh. But it's a good question.
There you go. Thank you, everybody. Now, in the chat room, please, if you put a question in once, you don't need to put it in again. It won't actually make the question any more likely to be answered. In fact, it's probably going to have the opposite effect, because it's just going to annoy the moderators who are moving the questions into my chat, so that I can I can have sort of calm, ordered lists of things. It's very... Anyway. Where are we going next? Let's take this one. And the right goes from Magdalena from Poland. Ooh, wow, this is the one. Have you heard of spiritual reptilian masters, those who through strong will and determination of the spirit separated from themselves from the mainstream and created hermetic group 2% of population of the Chukonian race, in opposition to most Dracos, that small group meditates and works with the illusion of ego, as well as takes part in Galactic Federation meetings. I encountered these beings in one of my shamanic telepathic journeys. The beings were the queen and the male protector. Both were the founders of some kind of scholar group, teaching younger reptilians to meditate and do yoga asanas. Male had wings and a golden crown of white scales. This is a long question. Do you want to jump in with us?
Yeah, I'll go in with that one.
Please.
You're absolutely right. I'm not sure about the percentage, 2%. I think that's rather high. This is actually a princess who was, I don't know what the word would be, I mean, excommunicated from the Vatican, I don't know. This is somebody who was a royal in the royal line who wanted to incarnate in a male body, didn't incarnate in a female body, therefore couldn't become the Lord High King of the reptilian race, and fell out and was pushed out from the group, took a number of the courtiers with her. This is the queen you're referring to. She's not actually really a queen. She's a princess, and she's a self-styled queen. She's working against the accepted Anu and the group there. We have to be very, very careful, because, you know, the old adage that your enemy is my enemy. We have to be careful, because sometimes an individual harbors such a growing hate that they want to get back at the people who remove them from their position, that drives them. So instead of being spiritual for spirituality's sake, they are just driven because they want payback. So we always have to be incredibly careful. Now, what I would say is that in this particular individual's case, it's been a very, very long time since this occurred, and they have naturally mellowed. In terms of the ascended, the master type program, I'm not really into that. But what I would say is that they do have ambassadors that they send to important council meetings, but they never meet in public. They always meet outside of public, because there's always assassination attempts. You know, if you turn your back on the Draconis Reptilian group and you are a living, breathing, white-scaled royal member of the family, and you turn against them, they will kill you if they can. So, yes, I'd say you're 90% correct on the question, but I don't know about the 2%. I think that's rather high, and I would counsel caution, because with reptilians, the payback, I will get you back, that can be a very eating up type energy. But again, another good question, JP.
Good to go. Oops, hang on. Off with that monitor. Right, okay, now next. Back to the CC questions. Okay. Now this is very concerning for everybody. Since nanobots are in the chemtrails, what can be done about these Morgellons blobs swimming in our bodies? Can we short circuit the chips without harming themselves?
Right. I'm afraid the chips aren't as we fully understand them. They are sentient. It's part of AI's. The whole point about this was part of the AI program to subjugate humanity. And Morgellons should be seen as part of that. The best way to develop a defense against Morgellons is literally, and this is old hat, but it's absolutely the best way, is to really, really sort out your diet. really sort out your vitamin intake, your fluids and your food, because what this type of energy does is it only seems to hook on to human type creatures that are under stress, biologically under stress and energetically, emotionally under stress, where the body is not operating at its normal rate. And it doesn't mean that these people are inferior, it just means that, you know, they went through a period in their life where they weren't at 100%. And that's why some people get it and some people don't, because the vast majority of the population now have got this in their body, but only a very small group are developing it. So the best defense is literally revolutionize your diet. And that's why, of course, the establishment is trying to put this rubbish food our way and poison, because they know that if they can weaken the human body to a certain level, then these type of diseases isn't even the right word, actually, but this type of life form, because Magellan's is another life form. We haven't got the time to go into it, but it is actually a fourth dimensional life form, or it's the beginning process of it, that if they can weaken the human body, then basically, you know, the human body will just very quietly change and develop the way they want it. So you can't stick yourself in a microwave. I'm being quite serious here. You can't stick yourself in a microwave. You can't deal with these things, because there are millions of them. You know, it's not just like I've got an implant or I've got this. We can get that one out, or we can put some strong electromagnets over it. But what we've got to do is to ensure that the divine source created the human body, and therefore we need to help divine source by looking after our body. So that's my best answer.
A previous guest of mine had the other suggestion, which was to actually command all the AI in your body using your manifesting power as a human to shut down and uninstall itself and then delete itself.
Right, I don't have a problem with that, but the problem is that I don't have a problem there. The issue with that is that only a small percentage of the human race is at an evolved position spiritually where it can command that. Because even if you have the best will in the world, unless you have mastered, I'm using the word technically here, unless you've mastered all the connections of your energy body and the connection to your physical body, you won't be able to do it. So that is correct, but when human consciousness reaches that level, then everyone, or those who have made that change, they'll be able to do it. But at the moment, the vast majority of people are not at that position. Therefore, the best defense is a physical defense, which is looking after your physical body.
Of course. So, yes. Two relatively recently, from Cheryl Manning. I wonder if JP could ask Simon what caused a strange light anomaly over California on the 7th of November. I certainly don't believe that there was a rocket involved in the government military maneuvers that were being held offshore. I'd really love to know what it really was. Do you really know?
No, I don't. I obviously, I'm Northern Hemisphere. You know, I'm in Britain, and the only thing I've seen is what's been shown on, you know, pictures and eyewitness accounts. And it's one of those things that it wasn't sufficiently important enough for me to go and seek further information on. You know, was it Planet X? I really don't know. Was it a shot down spacecraft? I don't know. But it wasn't anything that was having a crucial impact on the timeline at the moment. So was there something unusual happening? Yes, there was. And it wasn't part of anything that was a standard test. But I don't know what it was.
Okay. From Tom Hyde. Now, this is quite an interesting question. What is the difference between Satanism and paganism? Often Simon Parks, David Icke, and many other truth seekers refer to satanic practices and grandmothers in the elite circle like witches. Who and what do theistic Satanists really worship? And you can please make a clear difference between who and what Satan is and who Pan, Horn God, is, and generally between Satanism, paganism, as in Wicca, etc. I know pagan and then brought to, and probably, you know, Satanism and then, you know, what's the other one? Luciferianism. Is that the same? Do you want to pull a few distinctions out? Because that's a very interesting subject.
Right, let's just start off. We can throw into this white magic, grey magic and black magic. Actually, I can say all magic. Most magic isn't bad. It is the intention of the conjurer, of the magician, or the witch, whatever you want. It's their reality in terms of what they wish to do with that magic. That makes it good or bad. If you are under satanic practices, conjure up a Denzian from the fourth dimension. If you wish to take it shopping with you, then there's absolutely no harm in that at all. If you wish to sit and have a chat with it about, you know, a philosophical argument, there's nothing wrong in it. Unfortunately, many, many magicians call forth these entities because they wish to have power over other humans or other people. And so they use those energetic beings and make a pact with them so that they can manipulate or control other people. So magic in itself isn't generally bad. It is the individual's intention. Right, when we talk about, and when I talk about Satanism, I'm referring to a specific practice of blood ritual. I'm referring to the murdering of children and women, and to a lesser extent men, as part of a blood ritual. So that's what I mean by a satanic practice. Paganism should not be seen in the same light. For heaven's sake, before the dear old Catholic Church came and disempowered the pagan communities and took away the rights of women, then, you know, I think actually we were far more connected to the planet and to the earth than we are now. So we talk about Pan, the horned god that played the pipes. This was very much a spirit of water and of the earth. If we think about the Green Man, we have a pagan tradition that honoured the planet, and I don't know enough to know whether there were blood rituals, but certainly it is the satanic form. Now, the argument between Satan and Lucifer is something that goes back to Victorian times. You know, it's like Father Christmas. When, as soon as Father Christmas became, you know, Santa Claus, Satan Claus, then we know that. And the first time that I'm aware that Father Christmas became Santa Claus in a red costume was under a Coca-Cola advert. Because prior to that, Father Christmas was seen in a green or a white robe. In a green robe because Father Christmas was representing the green verdant that was going to come through in the new spring. So, let's be clear, let's not get paganism confused with Satanism. And people like David Icke are quite right to keep using the word, because what we are doing is saying that this is a practice where generally people join together for blood rituals because they wish to control other individuals, and that's a very negative practice. I hope that helps.
Good, thanks. It's always good to, because some people just don't know what certain words mean and use words inappropriately. It's always good to have the appropriate meaning. All right, here's some personal stuff. Any more news on Simon's book? How's that book of yours going? And will it contain how to raise your frequency to be able to connect more, communicate with interdimensional beings, and a timeline of history, and how interdimensional beings influence and intervene through prehistoric, dark ages, medieval, renaissance, and all the eras up until now? If not, any recommendations if you're not going to write about it?
That's lovely. The answer is yes. That's exactly what it will contain. The book was simply, I wrote it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and so much has changed that I've had to add chapters to it. I haven't actually had to change anything. I've had to add chapters to it. And I had to make a very conscious choice. What did I feel was important to me? Was it to spend countless evenings writing a book and then sending that out? Or was it doing things like your show? doing conferences, talking to people during the day on the internet, and I decided that there is a place for the book, but it wasn't at that time. Now, I think that this will be the year that the book is published, because I think we've reached a stage critically where I can change focus a bit, and I think I've reached a stage where I can change focus a bit. I've always said for the last 5 years that 2016/17 was the make or break. Now, I know other people banned dates about 2020, 2025, and they're absolutely correct. But it is this year and the following year that all of the things that we've been talking about and we've seen gradually happening are going to come into fruition. So once that becomes very obvious to me and to everyone else, then I think I can spend time on the book. So yeah, hang in there, it'll come out. Whether it'll be published, hopefully Human Consciousness will have raised up enough and there'll be a publisher who will say, yep, I'll go with that, rather than what I have had in the past when I went to get a publisher and I was told, yes, we'll publish it, please take out, I think it was chapter five, I talked about MI5 and MI6 and the National Security Agency, and the publisher I spoke to said, if you get rid of all of that and make no reference to MI5, then we'll publish it. And I said, you know, no way, because that is an incredibly important part to explain to the reader who I am, how I got here, how my life has been shaped and formed in the sort of family I came in. And, you know, you it's like you wanting to take away one of the supports from a big house. You know, no, that won't happen. So that's why I didn't get published in the early stages, because publishers were too damned frightened to publish the stuff I wanted to say about MI5 because they thought they would be closed down. However, Human Consciousness is rising. More and more stuff's coming out. Fingers crossed. Let's hope it comes out this year.
Great. In corollary to that, people are also asking, when can you start receiving bookings once again? Because, and when will you restart doing your readings?
Yes, I'm going to be looking to relook. I'm not going to promise when, but it's certainly going to be relooking at this year, what I can realistically do. I'm reasonably booked up to March, reasonably, but I've been trying to clear. There's a backlog. There's a waiting list, and you know, it's only fair that those people get seen. So what I've been doing is like taking them after booking. So if I finish at say 6 o'clock in the evening, then I'm adding another one on there. So once that backlog is cleared, then I'll be retaking the booking. So probably within 4 weeks. So probably within 4 weeks we'll be rebooking.
Hurrah. So, you talked about MI5. You talked about the NSA.
Mm.
Here's another invisible point of influence on the general public of the world. The Tavistock Institute.
Right.
This is from Javier Socorro. Okay. I think I never heard Simon mention the Tavistock Institute. I hear it a lot lately. Can you, Simon, share anything about this subject?
Yep. The reason I don't talk about it is because a number of clients that I deal with have had experience in the Tavistock Institute when they were children. And I know that some of them listen to the show. And I always have to be, it's a balance, JP, an audience, because I want to get the truth out there, I want to be honest, but I'm aware that, you know, there are some people out there who, I can't say to them, don't listen to the show because I might talk about this subject. And most people are quite moved on and quite strong, but there are some people who still are going through the process. The Tavistock Institute, which is in Britain, and is linked to eugenics, is linked to many other things. I've got to be very careful what I say. We don't want to be sued. What I can say is that there are a number of clients who've consulted with me, and one person who actually came to the house. And this person was in their 60s, and the type of mind programming that this individual had, because it was very, very early stages, early 60s, I think, was Yellow Brick Road. So this individual had a Yellow Brick Road program, because that's basically what was around in those early days. This actual individual had really, really done a tremendous work on themselves, and had, I didn't need to do much because they'd worked so hard to heal themselves. You know, in Great Britain, we have one day a year where grand houses, big places, open their doors to the public. They don't have to do it, but it's quite a tradition. It's been going for about 20 years, maybe. So one day a year, many, many institutions open their doors, and you can go in for free and have a look around. I don't think the Tavistock Institute would be one of those organizations opening their doors so that you could go and poke around. So I can't say too much. But I certainly wouldn't stop there and go in and ask for directions if I was lost.
I tell you, you know, when I was working in London, back in the 1980s, I worked at University College London. And we worked at the right, at the north end of it. And the street that I was on, when I looked out of my window, I would see MI5's K Division on the other side of the, literally on the other side of the road, like 20 yards away. And then the other end of that road was Tavistock House. And, you know, it, to me, it was, I used to love the place. It was a fantastic atmosphere living in Bloomsbury, you know, working in Bloomsbury.
Yes.
But I never knew what the heck these guys were up to. If I'd have only known then, you know, I knew nothing. I was just a, you know, little...
There's more than one building, you see. They have a large building in the country, which is the one that I think a lot of adults who were children would be familiar with. The one that you're referring to is more administrative, where the meetings are held and the top brass sits around.
Yeah, I imagine so.
But yes, I mean, fascinating, because you could sit there and watch and see all the people turning up and going in there. So yeah, I can. It's quite an interesting place to be, JP.
We always used to look through the in the MI5 building to the status display. You know, whether it was red or orange. You know, because nowadays it's kind of all the way up the top, at blue or purple or whatever it might be. You know, but it used to be quite calm. Back in the day.
Well, they used to work on the traffic light principle, and then when they add more and more layers of warning, or more and more layers of alertness, then they added all these extra colours. But originally the colour coding was very simple. But you're right, purple is one of the most critical situations to be in. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Canadians. Kanukistan. From Karen Shondell. I'm among a handful of Canadians in the CC group, and we just got a new Prime Minister. Yay! Justin Trudeau, who is the son of Canada's fourth Prime Minister, Pierre Elliott Trudeau. Sorry, I've gone French-Canadian. You can't help it. It's the worst accent in the world, and my dad had it. So. He seems like a great breath of fresh air who wants to do amazing things, but he recently announced he also supports Israel, which to me is the same thing as saying he's yet another puppet. Does Simon have any insight about him and how he fits or doesn't fit into the global agenda?
Right, let's come at the other end. Supporting Israel is absolutely perfectly fine. What's not fine is supporting the elements of Zionism that wish to alter the state of Israel and use the state of Israel to be the leading agent in some of the most difficult and unacceptable situations around the globe. So we must immediately make a distinction between Israel and Jews and elements of the Zionist group. Because much of the situation that we've seen develop on the planet over the last few years have come from a small number, but still quite significant, of the Zionist group. You know, if we talk about 9/11, well, we know that the Zionist group, or part of the Zionist group, were involved in that. In relation to your new Prime Minister, I think we have to honestly ask ourselves, when somebody reaches a position of responsibility or the potential to be a prime minister, are they really going to be different? Would the system have let them get that far? If you know that someone is going to be potentially a prime minister or a president and you don't like them, wouldn't you take them out before they got in that position? A very, very good friend of mine, who I absolutely know speaks 100% the truth, had a meeting some years ago with Condoleezza Rice, who was then head of the internal security, or whatever the Americans have. There's so many security badges and names, I lose them all. And during the conversation, it was when George Bush was coming up for re-election, and during the conversation, Condoleezza Rice was asked quite innocently, who do you think is going to win the election? Will it be George Bush or whoever the Democrat candidate was? And Condoleezza Rice just said straight away, oh, it's okay, we've spoken to the Pope, which would have been John Paul. We've spoken to the Pope and we've agreed that it's going to be George Bush for a second term of office. So when a rising star is detected through politics and it looks like that individual is going to rise to high office, you either try to buy them, blackmail them, threaten them, and if that doesn't work, then you kill them. And we know that JFK could not be blackmailed, could not be threatened, so they killed him. So don't please expect too much from a new prime minister. Thank you, JP.
I know, same old, isn't it? Until when?
Well, until not too long away, actually, until we start to get a position that when the public actually don't accept the status quo, and that it is happening. I know it's not fast enough for us, but it is happening.
Excellent. So, meanwhile, back at, it's now four documents full of questions. one question was, could you tell me what really happened on 9/11? But you just answered that. So, dear Simon, what's the link between animals here on Earth and other intelligent ET races? Oh, this is a great question. Here on Earth, we have feline races such as cats and lions. We also know that there's at least one intelligent ET feline species. Oh, Christian Romana, I like you. We have mantoid insects here, but we also know that there's an intelligent mantoid ET race. The list goes on and on. Could it be that there are other intelligent ET races out there, each representing animals here on Earth, such as an intelligent elephant race, a dog-like race, maybe an intelligent penguin race?
If only. An author called Philip Pullman wrote a book called The Dark Trilogy or The Dark Mysteries, and it actually made a film. Unfortunately, it was a box office flop. It's such a shame. It was called The Golden Compass. And the hero of the story was called Lyra. So you can see that this person has some understanding. And in the book and in the film, these human-type creatures, who weren't actually Earth humans at all, had energy spirits, but they weren't demons as such. So they call them demons, so we have to be careful. But they were power animals, and they were attached to them, so they would have a lion or a dog or whatever it might be. So in Philip Pullman's world that he created, he was trying to show that humans were inexorably connected to animal type energies. So if anybody needs, you need to go and see The Golden Compass, get it on DVD. It was a flop, so you can buy the DVD sadly for a fiver or $7 or $8 and read the book. Let's talk about the wider question. During the 1960s and 70s, people expected to see portrayal of alien creatures with 50 eyes, 200 arms, and great blobs of jelly, and they loved it and they laughed. And then we began to see during the late 70s and the 80s portrayals of aliens becoming more human or more accepted as human. And this was very destabilizing to the psyche of the human race, because we love looking at bug-eyed monsters. But when something looks just like you and I do, then many people can't handle that. So it shouldn't be surprising. I and others have talked about the 12 strands of DNA, how different off-planet races have contributed to the creation of humankind. And in the same way, there are living forms on this planet that are not the same, but replicated on other dimensions. if we accept, and I certainly do, that dolphins are not native to this planet, dolphins were brought here from a water world, part of the Cirrus or Sirius planetary group, and we begin to understand that planet Earth is actually a hodgepodge of locally developed or grown creatures, laboratory experiments, and also things brought in from elsewhere. So yes, there's actually a dog race. I've not seen one, but I've spoken to enough others to appreciate it. But it shouldn't be so surprising, because of this egocentric view that many humans on the planet have, which has come through the Catholic Church, which is the humans are the most important thing everywhere except for God, and that therefore we have dominion over everything else. And we look on the human form as the most perfect and pure form because it was God's image, although of course the Bible makes it plural. We tend to think of other animals as lesser, but if we were to understand that say a mantis or a mantid creature has a representative on Earth, it doesn't mean that they communicate, it doesn't mean they share the same soul, but it means that they shared a same history, a shared history of development. And once we understand that, then we can begin to appreciate our role as a human type creature within the greater mix. It's a really good question, and I'm not going to go on anymore because we need to cover all the other questions, but it is a fascinating topic, so thank you for that.
Excellent. My girlfriend calls the dog race the Anubians.
Yep.
And we've come to an agreement that the Sphinx was a dog, and it lost its head. It's very ancient, very very ancient. Because there's two of them they're either side of the grand thing. They haven't uncovered the other one because they know it's a dog and it's not a little lion. Lions don't look like that. Anyway, long story. But the Anubians, she calls them. So,
see, that's linked to Orion.
Yeah, definitely.
Carry on, JP.
Okay, so, from CC member, sorry, I just threw that one in, I want to ascend. What happens to a djinn if the person it is attached to dies? Does it return back to the realm of, or do they attach to the nearest thing? Yeah, what's the, and, what is there any latest news from the djinn world?
That sounds like a djinn palace.
Does, doesn't it?
Many people won't know what a djinn palace is, JP, but never mind. Right. If the death of the host, the human, is brought about by the demon, if the demon actually can see the death coming, and in fact most cases they can, then they will move residence before that happens. Many of these demons are actually in there to kill the person they're in, but in a case where they're not, and the individual dies by chance, then the creature will just immediately vacate the body, open a portal, and return back to the interdimensional space. Yeah, so very straightforward.
All right. Okay. Now, and here's a very poignant question. Are people really dying in these false flag events, or are they all actors playing a role? Are they just throwing alarming numbers of casualties at us to try and persuade the world to follow along with their plans?
Right, some people are dying, but the key people who are just by chance in the camera's lens are not. They are actors. But there are many very innocent people who get caught up in it, and unfortunately, as hard as it is for good people to accept, that this is seen as, oh well, it's just a price we have to pay. And I've said it before, of all the terror attacks we've seen, how is it that the camera just appears to be in the right angle to catch the action, but not all of the action, just a part of the action, and it's very very steadily held, and it seems to be, you know, quite well done. And I wouldn't be the first person to say that there are incidences where a person supposedly died in one American school shooting suddenly appears screaming and running in another. So just as in 9/11, large numbers of actors were interviewed on the street pretending to be office workers, So these people play key roles, but yes, many genuine people do die. So in the terrible French attack, yes, lots of people did die who were totally innocent and had nothing to do with it.
Simon, this is for me. Do you think that the dialogue, the monologues that these people blurt out, to me, it's really stilted. It's really, this is not natural language. Yep. Do you think this is scripted by an AI program?
Well,
or do you know?
When a organization or a individuals are going to put such a horrible crime together, they cannot rely on actors learning their lines. You know, you're not going on to an advert to sell soap powder, because if you get it wrong, it doesn't matter, it's not live, they just redo it until you get it right. But many of these interviews that take place on the street are live, therefore they cannot rely on these actors to do what. So they are mind controlled. These actors are all identified, brought in months beforehand, and they are given the lines to say, so that the organization can be absolutely certain that they will be word perfect. What tends to happen is that the human actor is a human creature. It has adrenaline and it knows something terrible has occurred, and it's also battling with its own guilt, or its conscious mind is fighting with its subconscious mind to try to understand what's going on. And often these sentences get mixed up, or they get said in a wrong way, and that's because of the stresses and the strains. Is it an AI program? No, it is a basic standard hypnosis stroke mind control program, but it is an AI program overall that is forcing this issue because it wants humanity to be destabilized. It wants people to live in fear, because if humans live in fear, they will grasp at straws. In other words, if Savior comes along and then offers them some technology or something that will protect them from this fear, they're more likely to go for it. So JP, you're right in the sense that the overall architect of this is AI, but at the grassroots level it's been done very mechanically through traditional means.
Thank you. Now, shall we take a quick break?
Sure.
It's just two, three minutes, just so people can take a quick bathroom break. We know there are some people who can only take an hour, aren't there, Dolly? Anyway, so we'll be back after a couple of minutes. This is the Mystère de Voix Bulgare. And welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. Well, where were we? Yes, that was. I really like the one about the animals myself, because there are all these different creatures that are coming through at the moment. You know, just like not human faced. But still quite friendly. So this is a right. Here's all right. I don't know if I can pronounce this word. Okay. Question from Simon, from Robin. Question from Simon. Hello, Simon. Did you ever hear about the book The Thiauba Prophecy? And if so, what are your thoughts about that? And greetings from Germany. That's Robin.
It just cut out a little bit. Could you just repeat that?
Have you ever heard about the book The Thiauba? Thiauba prophecy. Thiauba
right.
Prophecy.
That's very interesting, because I haven't, but I've heard of it, I've not read it. It's on my to-do list. Somebody over Christmas asked me exactly the same thing and sent me a link, because I believe there is an electronic version, and I haven't looked at it yet. Thank so you. Maybe we could revisit that next time.
Good, good, good. Or you know, maybe you can talk about it. You know, I'd like to have to talk to you on the show about not you answering questions, but you talking about what you do, or you know, some insight, a day in the life of Simon Parks, because you know, there are, well, maybe there are things you can't reveal, but there we go. There's a thought. Laura K. Clayton. asks, greetings Simon and JP, I wait all month for your show and greatly appreciate this opportunity to ask a question. Recently, when Dr. Greer released a listing of all the underground bases in the US, three of them are located just minutes away. The county road is a dirt road named Starlight, which goes right by it. One of these bases is I'm now wondering about the fact that I bought this place back in 1992 to eventually live in, and knowing what I'm learning now, I'm thinking it is not a safe place to live. Two of the tenants, who don't know any of this, have had apocalyptic visions. Would you think it was a safe place to live?
Above right.
Well, there you go.
Let's look at it this way. Sometimes people are drawn to certain areas. Their conscious mind doesn't understand it, but the subconscious is drawing them there because they have some connections. It'd be possible that this individual has actually been in this base, but has no recollection of it consciously at all. I don't know what the apocalyptic visions are. I would suggest that, you know, that would be worth discussing and understanding. Is it safe to live there? I can't answer that because, you know, you could cross the road and be killed by a motor car. You could live on top of an extinct volcano and it'd be fine for 1,000 years. So if the person is actually saying, am I safe both emotionally, energetically and physically, then I would have to know a lot more about what that individual felt, what those apocalyptic visions were, and what more she could tell me about that base. So unfortunately, I can't give any more without further information.
Okay, thanks very much. I just want to say, I'm just looking at the listener distribution here. We've got United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Australia, the Netherlands, Ireland, Sweden, Switzerland, and some others. So welcome,
everyone. I'm really pleased with that. The issue for me, of course, is they are, as you would fully appreciate and understand, they're English speaking. And what I really want to do is try to get into those countries where English is not the first language. It would be really lovely to, you know, have a big base in some of these countries. But yes, quite naturally, we're going to draw the English speaking world. And, you know, it's fantastic that we've got people in far-flung places, different types of jobs, different aspects, but all have a shared vision and know that this world that we live in can be made better. And, you know, that's what excites me, is that we have all these people all over the planet, all want something to happen and quickly. And, you know, that's just brilliant. It's just fantastic.
It's almost as if they kind of know that something should be happening and they're wondering who the people are that should be making this happen. Oh, it's us. It's you. You're listening to this show. You're part of it. Wouldn't you say that, Simon?
Yes.
More than part of it.
I think that depending on, you know, some people have been awake for 30, 40 years. Some people have only been awake since yesterday. But we're all on this journey. And listening to this show helps to connect people. It makes people realize that there is an, I use the word loosely, there's an army of people out there who don't have a flag or they don't have a uniform, but they have a belief. They have a vision. And so we're not all separated. We're not all isolated. We are actually connected and we are all believing that something better can happen. Yes, it is down to us, but we need focus and we need support. And, you know, that's hopefully what's coming.
That's really great. Okay, now where are we going? Mm-hmm. Okay, so there are a couple of questions here and I'll condense them both. Simon, what are your thoughts on the being Thoth, Tot, or whatever you might call them, and other variations of that being in the Emerald Tablets? And you said the soul readings, so they talk about soul readings in a holiday, so we've already covered that. So, all the best from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Well, that's a nice question, thank you. Aleister Crowley, of course, was very much into the Thoth character. And has a very strong Egyptian link. and is used by a number of magic groups or societies as a deity that they wish to, I don't know, worship is actually not the right word here, but to emulate or to connect with. We tend to think of people who channel someone who sits, you know, in a round table and hold hands and connects with some far distant entity and scribbles a few bits on a notepad. But there are very many societies who would say that they connect with individuals, and one of those individuals is the character Toth. We haven't got time seriously to do justice to the Emerald Tablets. Although I would welcome having a conversation with that individual, you know, on Skype or something. But basically what I would say is that, going back to what we've just been talking about, that the real chance for freedom lies within ourselves, and that we don't actually need any of these deities or gods from elsewhere to direct us or advise us or give us assistance. We just really need to do it ourselves. If you look at characters like Toth, they have been involved in situations where mankind, I'm using the word loosely here, mankind has been manipulated. They are associated with empires, they are associated with hierarchy, they're associated with a very strict, delineated way of living, and that actually isn't the future. The future that I foresee, and I know many others, including you, JPC, is an equality where we are equal and we don't have to bow down literally, physically to some being. So I'm always very, very cautious of these characters, but nevertheless, they're worth researching, they're worth reading about, they're worth understanding, but they're certainly not worth worshipping.
There you go. That's what you have to do. You can't do any worshipping any days. Right, no. Here's a big one. Enormous letters. Hello, Simon and JP. There are quite a few women trying to cut any contract with the djinn, but the challenge has not been an easy one. Beside the advice on your website, do you have any other advice? There has been a big shift in energies over the last year, over the new year, and I feel that there's been a significant leaving behind of the ability of more negative entities to hang on. What are your thoughts on this? Also,
yeah, okay. Oh, hang on, let's just do that one. I agree with that. Okay. There's a key word here. On my website, I give options for removing djinn entities that are placed against somebody or into somebody where that contract isn't particularly strong or is non-existent. If there is a contract between the individual, the host, and the parasite, in this case a djinn, then that will require a different approach. Because what we're looking at there is a contractual arrangement or agreement, which means that it has to be null and voided before the entity can be expelled. You cannot expel an entity if you leave the contract in place. So that's very different. So what that person needs to do, I suppose, is to, if they know of people who are in that boat, then you need to try and get hold of me and then maybe I can do something to help you. What was the second question? I'm sorry, JP, to interrupt you.
Oh, not a problem.
It's just I have to do that, otherwise I won't remember.
Of course, I understand that. Yeah, nope, not that one. All right, so I just had to find which document I jumped out of and to take it back from that one. Not that one. Wow. Not that one either.
Okay, do you want to let it go?
Yeah, let's go. Now, this is an interesting one. So, could you please share your knowledge about this? I've read and heard a lot about, quote, getting into a higher vibration. Is one part of the human ascending process, if you can call it like that, mostly correlated with the heart and a feeling of compassion? On the other hand, there are many sources that bring meditation and higher states of awareness together with low frequencies in brain activity. How does all this high and low fit together? What a good question, doesn't it? It's like, people always talk about, oh, get into a higher vibration, all those low vibrations, and yet when you're talking about brain waves, you want to get to the delta, you want to get to the theta, the low frequency vibrations. Do you want to talk a little bit about terminology of vibration?
Right. There's not a misunderstanding, but there's a misconception here. When we talk about those particular brain waves, we talk about the transcension between the waking world or this physical world and this other ability to connect. But that's not what I and others are referring to in terms of what we need with the higher vibrational rate. The questioner talked about compassion. When you make a decision in your life that benefits other people, then you are moving towards a higher vibrational rate. You create a higher vibration within your physical body, which your physical body then has to match. Now, it doesn't always, there's always a terrible lag, and that's why many people feel sick and ill, or they have migraines, or they just, they feel really awful for a couple of days, sometimes for a few weeks. That's because they've made great leaps and bounds, but their physical body is always slow to catch up with the positions they've done. So when we're talking about, when I'm talking about higher vibrational frequency, I am referring to the energy that is given off by the body, but is also connected to what people loosely call your higher self, which is the 12 strands of DNA, and is really you, so it's all a big circle, really. And you're trying to feed it back into your body because you wish your body to actually catch up with that. So when we, you talk about the delta waves, when we are in a communication at a lower frequency, that isn't anything to do with ascension process. I'm using, again, the words that we would just use generally. So you would still be able to access lower frequencies in a higher frequency setting, because if, as a living creature, you have been part programmed or evolved to have gateways in your mind that can be opened at frequencies that are below the high frequency level, then we have to ask ourselves, why is that? Why do we have these gateways or this opportunity to understand ourselves or go on a trip or go and do what have you at a lower frequency? And we should be very suspicious about that. I'm not saying it's bad, but I'm saying that that isn't actually necessarily natural, because we are, as a species, or many of us as a species, are going to evolve and we are going to increase our vibrational rate. So we will always be able to access lower vibrational frequencies, but the tail end of those should drop off. So as we advance, so the lower frequencies should actually drop off as well. So it's an incredibly important question, but do not mix the biological, scientific understanding of the brainwave pattern with ascension pattern in terms of the higher frequencies. So I've tried to answer that as best I can. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's tricky. Tricky stuff, isn't it? Anyway, but I mean, every time you answer it, you do it from a different angle, you don't repeat yourself, so it's, eventually everybody will get the angle, because there's so many different ways of looking at something. Simon from Max of Steel. Simon, we know that you are a specialist of the fourth dimension and the creatures that are in it. But what can you tell us about an other dimension group called the Arcturians and their role for humanity in the next years? Thank you for your time, which is worth a lot.
Well, that's very kind. Yes. The term specialist is something I've never heard of before for me, but that's interesting. I'm most familiar with the fourth dimension, but that doesn't mean that I draw a blank outside of it. Arcturians are from Arcturus, a very, very interesting group, actually, because they are fifth dimensional. Well, 20 years ago I would have put them in the fifth dimension, but now I actually put them in the bottom of the sixth dimension. So they've recently been promoted. They don't play a huge part on the Earth in the sense that their numbers are quite small. So if you were to put 1,000 people in front of me and I'd find 20 that had Arcturus or Arcturus type souls in them. However, they are very influential because in their position in the dimensions, they have the Lyrans sitting above them, which is a very interesting spiritual energy, and just below them they have the Palladians, which is a very tough, strong, matter of fact, we're going to get this done like now. And so the Arcturians have always been not squeezed, but they've been influenced by those two energies. So they tend to be, as people, more reserved, deep thinkers, but they tend to keep their own counsel. They tend to be quiet themselves. But we've seen over the last maybe 20 years more of their people incarnating onto the planet. Arcturians do not, to my knowledge, overtly take part in physical battles that have taken place above the Earth, but they do send technical representatives, and they are part of this wider federational group who have a blueprint for the Earth. So they are key players, but they've only recently become much more involved. So I hope that's helpful.
Are they like one of those, they talk like a type 1, type 2 civilization, where they can like do things with stars and stuff like that? You know, move energies and move stars around and things like that?
In the early stages of that, I would say, the interesting thing is, I literally would say in the last few years, I would put them from the fifth to the sixth dimension. But many of their people on this planet are just showing fifth dimensional energy because that's where they've come from. Right. I am aware of one Arcturian attempt to interact with the Sun, our star, and to alter its frequency, because you see a lot of the frequencies that this planet Earth and other planets in and around us are being influenced by the Sun. It's a very, very important raiser of the frequencies and the consciousness. And the Arcturians have, to my knowledge, on one occasion, successfully engaged with the Sun in a physical technology type engagement to alter the Sun's frequency. So the answer to your question is yes, but not at the level that would allow them to be a creators. They're not creating a force, but they are manipulators of force. I don't mean manipulation in a bad way. Somebody who makes a horseshoe or makes a gold ring for someone's finger, they are manipulating a raw material. So the Arcturians have the ability to do that, whereas the Palladians generally didn't go down that road, neither did the Lyrans. They went down different roads. You see, each group of humanity found a specialism or an interest where they went down and they developed it, and thank goodness they did, because when you have a council, a meeting, you have all these representatives of humanity, and each person represents a community that can do a certain thing. So you have all these specialisms. That's what the reptilians don't have. They have just one major group who are very, very good at copying stuff, stealing stuff. Very good geneticists, as I've said before, very good nanotechnology, but they're not good at creating new ideas. Whereas with the human race, they're absolutely fantastic innovators. So when you've got this grand council, there's more than one council, but the council of humans together, they can both outthink and out-attack the reptilians. But the reason that is only beginning to have effect is because until recently these human groups didn't work together. It was a very bitty, piecemeal type interaction, but now they are working together and pooling their resources. That's why the reptilians are under such pressure. So that was a good question, thank you.
Yeah, great answer, thanks. Right. I've got my own answer to this, but in 1977, a British news channel was interrupted, hijacked by an alien called Gramaha, the representative of the Ashtar Galactro Command. Was this real contact with an ET race or some sort of government experiment like the H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds broadcast?
That's actually a really good question, because the person already knows the answer, as do you. It was... When we talk about flower power and the hippie movement, sometimes themes or organizations are formed in a room, and that idea is then put into practice. Other times, human consciousness creates it, and then the bad guys, for want of a better word, need to try and get in there from their perspective and try and alter it before it destroys them. We would have to say, look at the facts and the logic, that a television... I think it was over southern England, actually. It wasn't the whole of Britain that got affected. It was
East Anglia.
East Anglia, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Would have to say, if it was genuine in the sense that it was a benevolent alien race, why did it not follow it up with other forms of communication? The problem that I have is that an electronic form of communication has been used. Now, that immediately makes me think of AI, and I'm familiar because I've heard tape recordings or recordings of AI messages that have been created by AI consciousness and are robotic in the way they are. So I do not accept that this was a genuine alien benevolent race attempting. I think it was the first part of a very, very well planned and organized game to see just how the human race in a target area would respond. And then it was followed up many, many years later, the last seven, 8 years it really kicked off, when they felt that human awareness, not consciousness, but human awareness had reached a point that it would accept a faceless spokesperson who would give them or seem to give them hope, but in a very controlled way. There are a number of these cults, and I am going to use the word, a number of these cults, and when you actually dig into it, they all, bottom line is, well, basically, we're finished here, so we're going to be taken away to a better place, another planet, and, you know, we are going to be saved, and these huge, huge motherships are going to land, and then the population can go onto these spaceships and then be taken to the planet Eden or wherever it might be. And this is said with all genuine belief. My immediate reply is, this is a lovely planet. I'm not going to leave it, and I'd recommend you didn't leave it. We should stay here and fix it, because it's not beyond fixing. So I think it was a very well orchestrated plan many years ago, which they tried to see into fruition from the year 2000, and certainly between 2010 and 2013 it was at its peak, but it didn't connect with human consciousness in the way they intended. It wasn't able to leave in a lot of change. So a long answer, but it's a very good question. We've had some really good questions this time, JP.
We so have. Because and this also ties in with the Archons and the Valons and all of these other beings, because here we go. Because from Kitty Kubiak, Dear Simon, I hope it's okay to ask this question, but I'm really worried about this. How do you know for sure the mantids are not Velon? Or if they are, why do you trust them? Or if they aren't, why do you trust them? I hope I'm not offending anyone.
No, that doesn't offend me at all. You know, sometimes when you hear people talking and they get asked a question like that, they immediately go into defensive mode. And you'd have to ask yourself, why would you not welcome a question like that? If it's touching a nerve or a bit of a raw bone, then, you know, you'd see that. I think that's a really good question. Because the messages that I've been given are not negative to humanity. That's the key. You should judge what people say and do as to whether they're good or not. So in other words, if Mantid Mum had said to me, you know what, it's all over on this planet, you need to go on JP's radio show and tell everybody to, you know, get on the spaceship and go, or, you know what, this particular leader is really good, get behind him, or, you know, I'm hopefully very critical. And if I would ever hear something that was negative or detrimental to the human race, then I would have to question it. You know, and there are some very clever beings out there, because what they'll do is they'll put a bit of disinformation in with some real good information. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the core values. You know, the core values. I know for a fact that the reptilians are negative. The mantid group that I associate with is incredibly positive, but that doesn't mean that all mantid groups, I can't, you know, speak for ones I've never seen, it doesn't mean that they're not negative, but certainly the ruling group that I am in connection with has never once wanted me to do anything that was detrimental to humanity, has never once wanted me to push an agenda. I've been given complete free will, and I don't, hopefully to goodness, I've never been on your show or anywhere else's show and said, you know, you need to jump off a cliff, or, you know, this, that and the other. So I judge the connection I have based on the heart connection, based on the love, and I can use that word because the mantids do have love, the reptilians sadly don't, and on their their understanding of the role of the human race on this planet, and the wish for human race not just to survive but to evolve. Whereas I know that the reptilian race wants the humans to survive but does not want the human race to evolve. Now, in terms of presentation, most people, not all, most experiencers or abductees or contactees do not see these creatures in their natural form. Majority of people have a screen memory or a disguise, simply because these creatures are very scary. So Jim Sparks, who I believe to be totally true and to have given a very good account in his book that he wrote, he recounts a story where he was surrounded by a number of these creatures and he couldn't see their face. And he said, "Show yourself to me." And they said, "We are considered by your species to be very frightening. Do you really want us to show ourselves?" And he said, "Yes." And they did, and they were absolutely reptilian. And Jim was very, very good in his book because he was honest. He said inside he was absolutely terrified, but physically he didn't dare show it. So what I've seen from a very small child is no disguise. I've seen these creatures from the age of 5 at least, exactly as they are, and they've been consistent with that. But because of my, I don't like the word unique because I suppose it make me sound like I've got an ego, but it's true to say that my experiences are very unusual across this planet. But because those, excuse me, those experiences are very unusual, I have the ability to associate with these creatures without going to pieces. I can still think straight, I can still be logical, I can still hold my own. And because of that, I've been very fortunate and I've seen what they look like. I also know that the creatures that we could call the Velon, or the archons, the ones that I've seen don't actually have physical form. Now, they can take physical form, but generally they are just a consciousness, just a swirling mass of thoughts. So I hope that answers the question, and there's no problem in asking questions like that. I'm very happy to answer them.
Excellent. Velon. Sounds like a nice material, doesn't it? I'd like a nice sofa with Velon covering that.
Yeah.
That's on it. Or a t-shirt, maybe. Anyway, goodbye. If possible, this is from Kurt Tyrell. If possible, could Simon briefly explain how each of the six previously failed earthly human ascensions were interrupted? Which civilizations were victimized by whom, and how were they destroyed? Did any of the people in these civilizations survive, and where did they go?
Good question, Kurt. Thank you for that. I can't give you all six because I don't remember them. But I think everyone who's become awake will understand the antipathy, the war between Atlantis and Lumeria. That was one such occasion. Generally what happened was that as humankind developed and appeared to be spiritually developing, a force was used to prevent that from reaching its natural conclusion. Generally, technology was used. All the students of our history who listened to the show will know that both Lumeria and Atlantis were incredibly technologically advanced. Atlantis was marginally more so. Both used crystalline technology, though the Atlanteans had the edge on this, and the Atlanteans also used women as guardians of the crystals in terms of their ability to communicate and produce energy. But we won't go into any more detail on that at the moment. The reality here, though, is that technology became the goal more important than spiritualism. And isn't that what we're seeing now? You know, it's the goal to have this electronic product, the goal to make this smaller, to make it prettier, to make it do more. You know, I was in my local store, and I did a talk on this just before Christmas in Britain, and lo and behold, 4 weeks later, I'm in my local store, and I see for about £20, which is absolutely nothing really, a light fitting, which has a loudspeaker in it, and you can sit in your front room, and you can get your smartphone, and you can start playing music through your light fitting. And I talked how dangerous this was because it was Wi-Fi, which was coming in at the same frequency of your brain waves. So, but that's another point. So in other words, technology is usually used to undo spiritual advancement. So there have been a number of times when the human race has reached the very brink, but in a positive sense, and it just needed, like the fool in the tarot cards, one foot on the cliff, one foot over it, just needed that extra movement to take it to be that spiritual advancement, and it didn't, because something happened to cause a war or to cause some form of falling back. So this is the seventh time, and the exciting thing is that this is the furthest we've ever got. I'll just say that again. This is the furthest we've ever got. Because all the other six times the human race was not taken out, but it was prevented. Now we've got further than we've ever done before, and that is why the elite really are in a real quandary, because they should have had the New World Order delivered on their doorstep by now. Both sides are behind in the game. We, as the people, are behind. We should be more advanced, but those at the top are also behind because they expected their New World Order by now, and they haven't got it. So everything's to play for. Seventh time lucky.
Right. All right. So let's talk about our luck as well. The luck of the spinner. CERN. You know, since we last spoke, there's been a lot of stories about CERN kind of burning its way through holes in the walls, making a lot of stuff. And yet, as you know, looking at the CERN website, everything's fine, business as usual, they're spinning lead around, you know, everything's hunky-dory. When they're going to stick the red mercury in, I don't know, but we'll soon see. what do you know about what's been going on with CERN? Obviously, you've been concerning bad fun, but yourself with it quite a lot. So
yes,
please stop me speaking.
No, it's fine. I took an yes. There are a lot of people who got the wrong end of the stick. There are a large number of commentators who believe that CERN has done it, has broken through the barriers, has created this, has created that. That hasn't happened. If that had happened, what would be in a New World Order situation? Okay? All that CERN ever achieved was to punch a hole, probably 0.8 of a millimeter, so less than 1 millimeter size, between this reality, the third dimension, and the fourth dimension. The object was to strengthen and create a portal through which living creatures could pass. Instead of something maybe 6 or 8 foot in diameter, 12 foot if they could get really lucky, they got 0.8 of a millimeter. But what they have been able to do is open a communications channel into the fourth dimension. So all of these stories about CERN has done this and CERN has done that, they're not right, because you would see that for yourself. The second thing is that a very, very good friend of mine sent me a text and was asking me in relation to my point about the weather here in the Northern Hemisphere, certainly in Great Britain, and this person asked me, do you think that CERN was the cause behind this, or was it HARP? And I replied that it was HARP. And I do need to just make a point for the British listeners, but of course it concerns everyone really, that in Great Britain, as part of the program to destabilize the British community, power stations have been closed down faster than the new ones are built, which means that this winter in Great Britain, we're around about the 3% below the requirement of electricity in a normal winter. In other words, if we had a normal winter in Great Britain now, the power supply, which we call the national grid, could not deliver it, and there would have to be what they call brownouts, I believe, is their own terminology. Basically, they would reduce the electricity, and if that didn't work, they would then literally have to close down areas so you'd have no power. Now, next year and the year after, that is going to get worse and worse. So what's happened this year is that we've had an incredibly mild winter. 3 days ago, where I live was 10 centigrade. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, unfortunately. 10 centigrade, which is incredibly mild and very, very warm. And I believe that HARP is being used over the Northern Hemisphere to artificially increase the temperature in Britain to prevent the need for huge amounts of electricity, because that would plunge Great Britain into a blackout situation, which would then destabilise the government. At the moment, people don't understand there's a lot going on in the British government, and they're not ready to do what perhaps they would like to do in America. You know, the Americans have 1 million police officers. They have a huge military force. In Britain, we don't. So if you had mass insurrection or revolt in Britain, the authorities couldn't contain it. And we had that 4 or 5 years ago when we had some very serious riots in Britain. The authorities lost control. So they've learnt the lesson, and they're desperately attempting to try and keep the idea that the ship is okay. So what I want to say on this subject is that in Britain, I believe that the weather is being manipulated. You are enjoying a very wet but mild winter, because certain technologies based in Scandinavia and indeed in Britain itself are being used to artificially manipulate the weather. So that's you've heard it here first, I think, JP.
Aren't we lucky we are having a very mild winter in the Blighty, says Top Girl Kitty. Although Craig's light bulbs keep flickering on and off. Well, here's a question. We're 10 minutes away. I was wondering, this is from Shadow. Hello, Simon. I was wondering, if spirits get trapped after they die in the grid that surrounds the Earth, then how come mediums can call the spirit of any dead person and get in contact and hold conversations with them? Is it because there is no time and the higher self of someone can send an unlimited number of point of views to any part of the creation? Thank you.
Right. When a spirit or soul is caught in the grid, it doesn't generally stay in the grid. It's transferred to what people who have memory would call it as a freeze box. Freeze box. So you don't actually stay. It's not like a fly trap. It's not like a spider's web where you've got all these souls all just caught on there. When they arrive, they're energetically shifted along. I would suggest that good mediums can't connect with every soul. I would say that good mediums can only connect with a small percentage of souls. You know, it's the charlatan in the Victorian times who would address a hall of 100 people, and, you know, 1 minute they would be talking to Aunt Aggie, and the next minute it's Uncle Fred. Genuine, real mediums can communicate with souls, but only a small number. If a soul has a strong connection to a property, a house, or a place where it lives, or indeed other people living, it may choose to stay where it is. It may choose not to try to go to source. It may choose to refuse to be taken to the corridor of light and be recycled. It may be so compelled that it has to stay because it wants to watch over what it is so energetically attached to. Now, these are the souls that that a medium can connect with. There are also this ability where an energy soul is so strong it leaves a ripple. And so sometimes a medium can connect with somebody who is actually not in the same place as you might think they are. So you drop a pebble into a river, the ripples run out. You can no longer communicate where the pebble went in because the water's gone smooth, but those ripples are running out. Now, in the physical world, that ripple has no ability to communicate, but in an energy world, those ripples can actually have contained consciousness, and you can actually communicate with those ripples on a two-way phrases as that ripple goes out. So that, I think, is the best answer I can give you for that.
Excellent, thank you very much. So, okay, so let's have some personality stuff. I heard from, this is from Carmen Guerrera. Sorry, I can't roll my R's. Anyway, I heard the actor Robin Williams did not commit suicide. Yeah, right. Just leant against the door and hanged himself, but was actually murdered because of his funding of UFO research. Is this true? Can you elaborate on this?
I think you have to be very careful what we say.
Otherwise you end up kind of... Yeah, exactly.
But I will say that there are a number of people who made money through the entertainment industry who 10 years ago wouldn't have dreamt of doing any of this, but through the rising of human consciousness have actually got together as a group, and they form support groups. So this may come as a surprise to even big commentators who talk about Hollywood as if they know it, etc., etc. But the reality is that a number of these very well-paid, high-profile people have formed informal support groups. Some of them have paid or taken advisors, spiritual people to advise them. Some of them have their own personal experiences. Others have it through connection with other people, which they've come to believe. The singer Robbie Williams, in my opinion, is an experiencer of profound happenings. There's not the sort of guy who sees the odd lights in the sky. I think the singer Robbie Williams has had some most incredible experiences, and I personally know that to be true.
I'd love to have him on the show.
Well, he never will until he retires, because he knows that it would, and at the moment with the level of human consciousness as it is, it would destroy the people who back him. In other words, the funders. I mean, it's not widely known, and I have mentioned it several times, but it's not widely known amongst his fans that, you know, a guy called Lear, Dr. Lear, is one of the very few professional doctors who specialised in taking implants out of people. We're talking not just alien implants, but human implants put in by the elite. And I don't know if it was in California. I think it was in California. But I know for a fact that the singer Robbie Williams, there are several Robbie Williams, so I keep saying the singer, actually had a clandestine secret meeting in a hotel room. Dear old Dr. Lear's dead now. But he had a clandestine meeting with Dr. Lear, and he was shown an implant. Now, that means that Robbie Williams has a great interest, and Robbie Williams also pays for a spiritual person to advise him. So in the same way, a number of other people who've made huge amounts of money can start to fund research, not in the way we understand it, but in a different way. So they start to fund people, they start to become interested and start to talk. And when they become a danger, not they become a danger, but their millions, the millions of dollars they made in the entertainment industry, they're now using that in a way that, that the elite never expected them to. And you can, if you've got a big, big budget, you can make things happen. And so that's why a number of these people are taken out, because they appear to threat. Now, the sad thing is, and people like Robbie Williams, who I believe are really good people, they're not protected. Their only protection comes from the organization they work for. They don't have a higher form of protection. So therefore, they can't come out and talk publicly. They can't come out and do what they want to do, because they will physically have their lives ended. So I don't in any way be disparaging about them. I perfectly understand if you have family and children, you've got to put that family and children first. So that's why I say that when these people retire and they're no longer part of the organization, then I think we'll get the truth out of them. But yeah, I mean, it would be lovely if these people would come on. I did a round table talk with the astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who went to the moon. And that was really nice to meet Edgar Mitchell. But I was really, really, really annoyed, because some of the other people on the round table were asking questions of Edgar Mitchell that he couldn't possibly answer publicly. I mean, it's so stupid. They were saying to him, okay, what did you really see? Did you see any flying saucers? Well, what is Edgar Mitchell going to say? Oh, yes, of course I did. That man's life is on the line. So we have to understand that unless you have off-planet protection, or you have some strange, weird agreement with a very high security source on the planet, you've got to be careful what you say. And so, you know, there are some people who are made examples of, and when these good meaning people end up dead and suicide or whatever it might be, it sends a message to everyone else to toe the line. So a long answer, but a very good question.
Okay, one last final question, because they've been okay, if somebody's got eyes that have got a slit in them, sorry, it was an enormous question. I just got taken off as well, because it was... if they shine a light in their eyes and they see it, and you see a kind of more like a slit rather than a round pupil, you've got green eyes, what might be the deal?
Well, first of all, it's not a bad thing. Let's get that absolutely clear. I have this conversation with many people, and I'll continue to have it, and I'll continue to do it in a very open and patient manner, because many people assume that if your eyes can go into a slit shape, then you must be the very devil himself. And that's just not true. A large percentage of humanity has reptilian in it, but some have more than others. And when you connect with whatever is your predominant type of star family, or a very prevalent star family, then you can shapeshift. Shapeshifting doesn't just mean going into reptilians. Unfortunately, when people look at an excellent website that David Icke has, they assume that shapeshifting is just being a reptilian. That isn't. I have personally been in the presence of what I call higher humans, humans from the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th dimension, who have shapeshifted, not into reptilian form, but into a much more higher human form. Now, if your eyes go into a slit, celebrate. Celebrate because you have been able to connect with a strand of your DNA, and you have been able to open that channel. It doesn't mean that you are going to turn into a dragon beast or anything like that. It just means that you have evolved to an extent. Remember that being reptilian isn't bad. What's bad is if you have negative intentions. Just as being Palladian doesn't mean you're necessarily good if you're going to go and blow up a planet, unless you've got some very strong reasons for doing it.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody base up.
Exactly. So, I don't know if Michael Caine is higher human.
So Michael Caine, so, yeah. Anyway, yeah, you got it.
So, yeah, I'll just quickly finish. So basically, that means if someone's eye is going out, you shouldn't just have to do it when you shine a light in their eye. If you can stand in front of a mirror and do it at call, then you've actually reached the position. And then try and connect with the other strands of DNA and trying to change other parts of you. So it's a positive thing. Please don't get stressed about it.
And with that, I think that's today's show. Thank you so much, Simon.
Pleasure. Lovely.
Glad to have you back. We'll get some of these. So we'll get some really good roundtables going this year.
I'd love to talk to you know who. I really would.
And really drill down into a subject and give it a sort of 360 degree examination from the inside, the outside, the above, and see where we can get to some of the biggest questions that we've faced in the last few years. Simon Parks, it's been another great show. Thank you so much. Any news or final message?
Well, according to this, we've already done the 2 hours. I just want to say to people that we didn't have a disaster running up to Christmas in this country, and that actually is a positive thing. If people can still believe and be positive and wish for the best, we will actually deliver the best. Do not let yourselves be drawn into fear and frightened situations because it's been pumped out by the media companies. Please stay true to what is good, and honestly, we will get through this. So thank you, JP.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.